Good day, and welcome to the conference call regarding the 2020 annual results of Fagron. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Fagron. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning to you all, and thank you for joining the 2020 financial results conference call of Fagron. We will start the call with a presentation on the highlights of 2020 by our CEO, Rafael Padilla, and our CFO, Karin de Jong. The presentation can be downloaded at our website, investors.fagron.com. After the introduction of Rafael and Karin, we will open the line for Q&A. Rafael will conclude the call with some closing remarks. Rafael and Karin, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Constantijn. Good morning, all. Again, Constantijn, congratulations for having prepared the day as good as you always do. Congratulations for this. 2020, if you recall, the last slide in the 2019 presentation, full year presentations, we said that in 2020 we would see further growth in turnover and profitability. Of course, 2020, as you saw today, has shown this. This growth would come from organic and discipline. That's very important for us. Acquisition of strategy, we have also done that. We also said that we would global rollout of our genomics platform. We have done that. We have entered in countries like the U.S. or in Brazil, though due to the pandemic, the quantities have been less than expected. On the other hand, we're totally prepared for full rollout in 2021. We said that we would develop strong R&D pipeline for further growth of our brands. That, of course, is very important in our strategic pillars. We have delivered an impressive growth in our brands segment. Last but not least, we entered into a partnership with Azelis in Australia. We, of course, consolidated this one, and we have opened an export department in order to further explore new opportunities in other geographical markets where we are not present.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. This slide shows the financial highlights of 2020. Fagron delivered solid results in an exceptional year. Our turnover grew by 4%, representing an organic growth against constant exchange rate of 8.1%. EBITDA before non-recurring items grew by 5.9%, and EBITDA grew by 5.6% to 120 million. Recurring net profit showed a nice increase of 8.3%, and our operational cash flow generation was again very strong for Fagron. Fagron generated 93 million of operating cash flow in 2020. Our dividend proposal is 0.18 per share.
Very good, Karin. Of course, as we said in the previous slide, we developed new brands. Here on the right side, you can see in our Fagron Lab division, an impressive air sterilizer that is very much needed in working and non-working environments during these times. Also, regarding new innovations, this is a very important slide because in our sterile activities, and this one in the U.S., we have developed new SKUs, 40 in 2020. We are going to develop 35 in 2021, and this is extremely important. Here we see very nice examples on our prefilled syringes. On the left side, a topical anesthetic sterile gel. On the right side, a very unique syringe for intraocular products without silicone. The market uses silicone, ours is without, so it's disruptive. In the middle, our new range of IV bags that is going to move the needle in 2020 for FSS. Next to this, our genomics division, that is also reported in brands, we launch our second product, that is the Nutrigen. That is the most complete nutrigenomic test worldwide, where we, of course, link the personalized prescription. You see it on the left side. It's a driver for personalized prescriptions compounding. On the right side, we also develop our own immune regulators products that are, of course, very important during this pandemic, and this came to stay. Prevention came to stay, and Fagron is extremely well-positioned. On the operational side, as we all know, we decided to invest in a new GMP repackaging facility, state-of-the-art in Poland. Here we share with you the photos of the building that, as we speak, finalized, and now we applied for the permits that we'll get in Q1 in order to start with the centralization process that we announced previously.
Fagron has a disciplined M&A strategy, and in January of 2020, we acquired a small German company named Harco. Harco is a leading developer of pharmaceutical equipment. It has a turnover of around 4.5 million euros. Next to this, in August of 2020, we acquired Pharma Tamar in Israel. The company is active in the essentials and brands business as well as in outsourcing of compounding and delivers to hospitals and pharmacies throughout Israel. Tamar does around 8.1 million of turnover and has an EBITDA around 10%. We are on track with the integration of both companies.
Now we go to 2020 results per segment. We start with EMEA, Europe, Middle East, Africa. We see a turnover development of 4% and slight decrease in EBITDA to 64.7 million. We see here a mixed picture. Of course, we have had COVID times in 2020, the first wave we saw in southern European countries like Spain, Italy, stricter lockdowns, and in the second wave, that's mainly in the last quarter of this year, in northern and eastern European countries, stricter lockdowns, and of course, the relevancy of Fagron is more in these countries, so therefore we see a mixed picture within this region in 2020. Of course, the decline of the elective care has been compensated by our brands and essentials for COVID-19 related items. Our teams have jumped extremely fast and agile to this. As we said in other calls, we are very proud because customers say we had the trucks of Fagron within our facilities and we're very proud of, so Fagron could continuously deliver the products because we have a strong supply chain. And when we look at the product segments, of course, we see that compounding services and premium pharmaceuticals in the fourth quarter have shown a decrease due to the fact that stricter lockdown increased or were bringing less visits into the doctor's office. When we go to Latin America, spectacular performance of the team there. In volume side, we have grown almost 20%. We have shown strong growth, of course, in both essentials and brands. We have made some acquisitions in 2019 that also contributed to this growth, and we see a slight decrease again in the compounding services. This mainly Colombia of almost 5%. EBITDA increase 2% to 25.8 million. Then we go to North America, our star region of 2020. We did extremely well in both brands and essentials and the compounding, mainly in the last quarter in the sterile services side. Of course, we see brands and essentials an increase of almost 31%. We see a demand on COVID-19 related products. And here we now see, we're seeing the payoff of centralizing our sales force, our back office operations, and we are increasing our market share in this segment. As we said before, when we spoke about innovations in the FSS division, we launched 14 new SKUs, with the IV bags being very important for us, and this year we'll see 35 new SKUs. We also, as we also said in the last call, we see new customers onboarding, and this is very interesting for us in the hospital network division. EBITDA, REBITDA increased spectacularly 42%, so kudos for our teams there in North America.
Yeah, 2020 financials. So this slide represents the turnover development per region in 2020. Turnover grew from 528.5 million to 556 million in 2020. Each region contributed to the growth. So EMEA showed 0.5% growth, while Latin America grew by 20.1% and North America grew by 11.3%, representing an organic growth against constant exchange rates of 8%. However, we did have an impact of the devaluation of mainly the Brazilian real, resulting in a negative impact on currency of 42.1 million. Compensated partly by smaller acquisitions we did for 26.7 million, resulting in a growth of 4% in 2020. Gross margin increased by 2.2% to 329.1 million euros. Gross margin as percentage of sales decreased to 59.2% compared to 60.2% last year. This decrease is mainly the result of lower turnover at compounding services, which has higher margins than brands and essentials. Also, the consolidation of the acquisitions and the product mix with a shift from elective care products to COVID-19 related products impacted the gross margin in 2020. However, we could compensate by strict OPEX control and monitoring of our costs. Operating costs increased slightly with 0.1%, resulting in a REBITDA of 123.9 million, representing 22.3% of sales, an increase of 40 basis points. The non-recurring results, non-recurring elements were mainly related to restructuring costs in EMEA and some acquisition and legal costs. EBITDA increased by 5.6% to 120 million. The depreciation and amortization increased by 6.7%. This was mainly due to purchase price allocations of the acquisitions. We saw a slight increase in our financial results with 3.6%. The effective tax rate, however, decreased to 18.6% compared to 20.3% last year. The cash tax rate is slightly higher than anticipated due to a delayed tax refund we expected in 2020 in the US. However, we expect to receive this in 2021, resulting in a net profit of 60 million, which represents an increase of 8.3% on a recurring basis.
Thanks a lot, Karin. Well done. So to finalize, what can we expect in 2021? In 2021, we'll see further growth in turnover and profitability. We will also see streamlining the EMEA region, both in the front office and, of course, in the back office. We will leverage the new customers that we gained during the pandemic in FSS US together with the new SKUs, both disruptive and the new segment IV bags in Wichita. We will further strengthen our R&D pipeline. We will develop products aimed at prevention. It came to stay, and Fagron is very well position. We will develop, as we did in 2020, new sterile compounds, not only in the US, but also in the other regions where we have these marvelous activities that is a fundamental growth for Fagron. We will continue and we will push the global rollout of Fagron Genomics, that is a very interesting tool in order to generate new scripts for our compounding facilities and, of course, customers. And we will continue our active and disciplined, and this is very important, acquisition strategy in EMEA and in North America. To finalize, we want to say that Fagron has shown a strong performance in 2020. Our almost 30,000 employees have done tremendously good. Congratulations for this. We have a diversified portfolio also region-wise. And our strategic choices on prevention and personalization of treatments have clearly paid off. Thank you very much, operator. We can go to questions, operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take our first question today from Stan Van Ester from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. Three questions, if I may. So the first one is, referring to your guidance for sales and REBITDA growth in 2021, can you provide some color on the underlying dynamics between essentials and brands and compounding this year? For example, do you expect growth in essentials and brands to tail off at some point, given the boost and the strong comp in certain COVID-related products in 2020? So that's my first question.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stein, and good morning. Regarding the 2021 and our qualitative guidance on increase in both revenues and profitability, we will see a strong increase in the compounding side, especially in the sterile segment. It's a very important one. We are investing a lot there. We will see there. And on the essentials and brand side, of course, we need to see how the pandemic will evolve. We have developed very interesting brands for the pandemic, for COVID-19 related items, but we also foresee as elective care picks back, we are very well positioned because we have done our homework in 2020 in order to further increase this essentials portfolio, because we want to further consolidate our market presence, especially in EMEA and in North America.
Thank you. Related to that, when do you see the point that elective care starts recovering both in the Netherlands and in the US as these vaccination programs ramp up? Do you have a view on whether this should be 2Q or more second half related?
Well, that is a very interesting question, right, that we all ask ourselves. So we expect, of course, further recovery, Q2, Q3, but we follow what also governments say and think and their prognosis, and this is a bit uncertain, right? So we are totally prepared when this elective care comes back. Again, we are extremely well position, our supply chain is extremely strong, and when elective care picks back, we are in a golden position in order to deliver extremely good results. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. And the final question is on the FTE reduction and more broadly the streamlining in EMEA. I would assume that there are some cost savings related to this exercise. Can you sort of quantify this? And also comment on where the FTE redundancies, in which geographies these have taken place. Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, Stijn. So indeed, we have taken several actions in the EMEA region. It's a combination of elements. So some things we already started up last year and the year before. So that's the centralization of our production facility in Poland. So we expect to have benefits of that. We're waiting on our license now. We expect to receive that, and then we're transferring our products throughout 2021 to that new facility in Poland. That will result in an improvement of our margins by 2 million, and we expect to see that full-fledged in 2022. As 2021, we will transfer parts of our business, so not everything at once, but parts of our business throughout the months in 2021. So that's the first one. Then we have done some smaller reorganizations already in the EMEA region. For instance, in the Netherlands, there we see a reduction of FTE and headcount, and we expect to have a saving of that of around 1.5 million. And then also on the centralization of some back office activities, that's a little bit too early to quantify as it's pretty complex, as you can imagine, throughout all the different countries we have. So it will take a bit more time, so it's a bit early to quantify that. So I hope that answers your question, Stijn.
Yes, thank you. That's it for me for now.
Thank you. We'll go to our next question today from Frank Claassen from Degroof Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning all. Two questions, please. First of all, could you elaborate on your competitive position in the Netherlands? Did you see any changes there? And also related to that, when do you expect some catch-up on the registration of these premium pharmaceuticals and mitigate the negative effects of that? And then secondly, financial question on the working capital. Do you still hold some strategic inventory? So is there more room for working capital improvement, or is the current ratio best there is? So any comments on that, please?
Yeah, good morning, Frank. So going to your first question on the competitive landscape in the Netherlands, we reiterate what we have said during 2020, that we would see some impact but non-material. So we have navigated very well in this respect in the Netherlands with our Dutch team. And on the premium pharmaceuticals, also as we all said in other calls, we have filed several SKUs into the Dutch authorities, and this is something that we don't have the control in this one, in the valuation and in the release of these premium pharmaceuticals, but of course, when they come, we will see a very nice tailwind.
Yeah, on the working capital, go ahead, Frank.
No, that was fine. Thanks for the first question.
Yes, sure, Frank.
Yeah, and then coming back to the working capital, so the operational working capital as a percentage of sales was 8.8%. There was a decrease compared to the first semester where we decided to have some strategic inventory. We built down on that during the second semester, so there's no huge strategic inventory. Of course, we see certain products where we have more COVID-related products, but there's not a huge stock built for those specific products anymore. What we did see is that on the payable side, we had a bit more impact because of our shortening payment terms because of COVID. So that's something we'll probably see recovering after COVID. We did some additional factoring, so the factoring amounted now to 29 million. So there you see a slight increase. So on guidance going forward, it will still remain between the 8 and 10% going forward.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go to our next question now from Matthias Manhout from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, Matthias, we hear you now.
Yeah, okay, good morning. Thanks
good morning.
For taking my questions. I have three, if I may. First question is maybe on the regional margins. Definitely Latin America and North America. Firstly, maybe on North America, you have shown some decent operating leverage this year. How should we think about the EBITDA margins going forward in North America, and then more specifically also on Latin America? Can you elaborate a little bit on why the margin in the second half was down? You did have a nice expansion in the first half, but now H2 it's down. Can you elaborate a little bit on why? And then also, how should we think about these margins in Latin America going forward? That would be my first, actually.
Yeah, good morning, Matthias. Maybe on the margin in Latin America, I think it's not, we saw a slight decline in the second semester. I think it's more related to product mix and competitive environment. But we are confident that 20% margin, EBITDA margin in Latin America is a solid margin for that region, seeing the competitive environment. So we don't see any structural declines in that market. It was more driven by a product mix in the second semester. On the U.S. side?
Yeah, sure, Karin, on the U.S. side, of course, we guided that in our midterm performance, we would see an EBITDA of 20%. We were coming from a low EBITDA percentage in North America. We have done this earlier than expected, so we are very happy and proud for this. Now our aim is to further invest in the organization for spectacular growth, right? As we said before, North America is one of our most important growth drivers, and we won't still keep the 20-21% EBITDA percentage. That, of course, it's a fantastic performance for the North American region.
Right. Then a second question is on M&A. I noticed that at the end you mentioned M&A going forward will remain a key pillar of the region. But you specifically mentioned EMEA and North America and not Latin America. Do you think what's the main driver behind that the fact that you will no longer look for M&A in Latin America? Do you think your footprint is fully complete, or are there other reasons?
Yes, Matthias, regarding this one, in Latin America, when you look at the market, the brands and essentials, we have consolidated the market in the last 10 years. So we touch all the segments of personalizing medicine, essentials, brands, technology, genomic testing, and now our purpose there, our mission is to continue this spectacular growth. The teams are totally prepared for this one. When we go to the sterile side, of course there are some sterile players there, but the market is just starting, so we want to see and we want to evaluate how this further develops. So we want to see how this will go forward, because sterile is one of our strategic pillars, and Latin America is, of course, important as well, but though we want to see how this will develop.
Yeah, maybe to add, we see potential in the EMEA market and US markets. EMEA, we're focusing on markets where we're not active yet. So in Eastern Europe, there are some countries where we're not active yet. We're also focusing on countries where we have a relatively small position in the brands and essentials. So, for instance, Germany, or on markets where compounding is allowed and we have no position, again, for instance, Germany. And in the US, of course, we see the underlying markets evolving very good. There's a lot of potential for the outsourcing market, so that's also an important element in our acquisition strategy. And maybe to add on the Latin, of course, we also consider the currency risks and related to that region when we make a decision for an acquisition going forward, as you can imagine, Matthias.
Yes, thanks. And then final question is on Wichita. Maybe two parts on it. Firstly, is on the SKU expansion. Can you give us a little bit of a feeling on what the total addressable market expansion is there? And then secondly, on the target, I see you mentioned still the disclaimer of COVID-19, but I'm trying to understand a little bit on what's going to be the catalyst or the moment on which you will make a decision, because COVID-19 is now there for a year. So how much further can it still impact your way to your 100 million sales guides by 2022?
Yes, that is a fantastic question, because we are very enthusiastic with Wichita. We are taking clearly the right steps, Matthias. On the SKU side, we ended the year with 146 SKUs. We added 40, and we're going to introduce 35. And as we said in the presentation, IV bags are going to move the needle. So as we speak, we are developing and launching these ones, and they are very much appreciated by the current customers and also the new onboarded customers. So this COVID-19 unfortunate situation brought us in the US, fortunately, new accounts, very interesting accounts in the hospital networks / IDNs. And with the current portfolio that we have with the OR syringes, adding the IV bags, we're going to move the needle in this year of 2020, clearly. Relating the COVID-19 situation, as we have said in other calls, we have two kind of customer groups. Again, this hospital network / IDNs, where we have developed extremely well during the pandemic. We have been, of course, next to the revenue evolution, we have been helping our customers, and this is for us very important, on the intensive care units with our sterile products. On the other side, we have the private clinics, right, where clearly there has been a postponement. Of course, depending on the states, there have been lockdowns with clinics even closed for a period of time. And this we have seen back in our performance on the private clinics segment that is relevant in our FSS business. Though, to finalize here and to explain why we are confident with the disclaimer that you mentioned, we have the good ingredients in order to make a good compounding for Wichita, and these are new SKUs, being one of them disruptive and the other ones very interesting. Secondly, the new onboarded customers. So when you mix those two elements, we will see very good developments for our FSS US activities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matthias.
Thank you. We'll take our next question now from Lenny Van Stenhuis from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning all. Was just looking to zoom in a bit on Europe. Several questions there. I was wondering about how market dynamics for the API business are developing in Europe. Are you facing an overall declining market or is it remaining stable? Second question on that, in the general region, where is growth within Europe still to be found in the coming quarters? Will this mainly be focused on rolling out the brands further in the region? Then lastly, on Europe, we see a bit of pressure on margins there. Is this also mainly a product mix effect or are there other factors playing into that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lenny, and good morning. Regarding Europe, on the first comment that you made on the API market, of course, we have the postponement or scale back, let's say it this way. There are clearly less visits to the doctors of the elective care, and this has impact to the compounding services that of course is very important in the non-sterile, of course, and in the countries where we don't have these activities on the API sale to the compounding pharmacies and also hospital pharmacies. We see a decline there, though we have been able to compensate in the essentials segment with COVID-related items and branded items. Regarding the growth drivers for now going forward for the EMEA region, there are clearly two growth drivers. First of all, and we have shown also in the last quarters, the brands, and therefore we emphasized during the presentation the strong innovation and R&D pipeline with branded products for COVID, to help to support our customers. Brands and innovation is for the first time ever that we go with one face to the market in EMEA with our beautiful brands and innovations. Secondly, also what Karin stated before, we are exploring opportunities in the sterile markets where it's of course possible to outsource. There's a new regulation that is a PIX with a regulation in the European Union, and this will make that the landscape will evolve into more outsourcing, and we are totally well positioned there. Of course, countries like Germany are a very good example of this where we should look at.
Coming back at your margin question, yeah, indeed, our markets in Europe differ from each other for products mix, but also on profitability level. We see that impacting our margins in 2020, where in certain countries where we have high EBITDA contribution, we see that activities are more negatively impacted by COVID, and we see that back in our EBITDA margins. We took, of course, other actions also, as mentioned earlier in this call, and as Rafa just elaborated on, to increase that again. But currently, because of the COVID and the elective care being postponed, we see that we have impact on margins.
Okay, perhaps if I may, last question, picking back up on the overall essentials market in Europe. Rafael, perhaps taking a more high-level view on that and removing the potential impact on COVID, do you anticipate that this is really a very stable market or is there still, let's say, mid-single-digit growth in the overall essentials market in Europe?
Yes, sure. And you see it very well because historically, and now we see it, the supply chain is crucial and key, and the broadening of the portfolio. And here we can say that we are very well positioned. We have in all the European countries, we have a very nice and broad product portfolio and a very strong supply chain. And our current competitors are, of course, local competitors. And this has for us, extremely interesting as we can consolidate activities like sourcing, like quality control, like repackaging. So we are extremely well positioned there. And as we also said, of course, brands are the driver for Fagron as we are unique. But though we want to say also that the consolidation is essential, and in some markets we have seen it with very nice developments in 2020. This is also very important for us going forward in the European region.
Okay, thanks very much for that.
Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question today, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll go to our next question now from Eric Wilmer from ABN ODDO. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Two questions from my side. First one, global shipping rates have gone up quite dramatically since December. I was wondering to what extent you expect this to impact Q1 profitability of mainly the EMEA division. So in, to what extent can you pass this on to your customers given the current market dynamics? And secondly, could you give some more color on the genomics roadmap? What kind of tests and how many tests and how many countries do you expect to add over the next few years? And maybe how many, how are prescribers responding to this new new offering? What is the feedback there? Thank you.
Yes, Eric. So regarding the shipping, you are totally correct. We see an increased shipping cost from our sourcing countries in Asia. Here we need to say that we have somehow experience in the logistics, right? Not only in Latin America, where we have been historically very strong shipping the materials into Brazil, but also in the EMEA. So we, one part of the organization, we have tackled the sourcing and supply aspects of our company. So we have been able to consolidate some shipping charges in order to reduce as much as possible this effect and to, of course, to pass to our customer this this price increase. So when this has been the case, we have passed successfully the price increase. So we are on top of it and we monitor, of course, the margin on a daily basis in the MEA region. And on the second one, on the genomics, that is, of course, a clear driver for our compounding activities. We have launched, as we said, the Trico. That was our first experience. That was for the treatment of alopecia. That is, of course, widely used worldwide. We have launched it in many countries where we are present. We are present in 35 countries, and we launched it in almost 20 of them, being very much accepted in the prescriber community. As an example, we were when we could be able to make the trade fair right last year in the Incas in Paris, and we had a very nice sellout in during the 3 days of the fair of 5,000 pieces. That is, of course, for us very much relevant. And as we always said, not only the tests, but also the prescriptions that are being generated. So the first year that we launched the genomics activity, we saw a nice turnover development for being a new product range with nice EBITDA margin. Going forward, our second panel, as we say, is the nutrigenomic panels, because here you can treat a lot the preventive and the lifestyle side of our business with integrative / orthomolecular elements, and this has been launched in Europe the last month, the last months of 2020, and we are trying also to make business with these two panels in Middle East, also in Asia. So we have a dedicated team in order to broaden our country spectrum, not only in Europe, Latin and North America, but also in the Asia Pacific region. Again, let's emphasize that this is a very interesting driver for new compounding scripts, and the doctors really much appreciate it.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you. We now have a follow-up question from Stijn van Ester from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. A follow-up question on what you said earlier on the EMEA landscape. You referred to a change in regulation that would allow more outsourcing. Could you elaborate a bit on this and comment whether you are willing to play this through organic efforts or through acquisitions? Thank you.
Yes, sure. So the ticket regulation that already existed, from in a European level, what we see is that during the pandemic, the hospital systems have had more pressure in the daily activities, and it has been formally or informally forced in order to follow up the regulation. For example, in a neighbor country like Belgium, that we see that it has been reinforced the usage or the execution of this PICT regulation that, as we said, already existed in the last 2 years, and we see this as a trend in other European countries. Of course, we have an effort organically. In the EMEA region, we have sterile activities successfully in the Netherlands. We're doing a very good job here in the Netherlands. As we see it in Belgium, that we are seeing very nice traction as well. In the acquisition of Israel, we have these sterile activities in South Africa. So organically, we are going to invest there, but also, as you said now very well, we are exploring acquisitions in the European market because we see this as a golden driver for us going forward.
Okay, thanks for clarifying. Thank you.
Sure, Stein.
Thank you. As a final reminder, it's star one on your telephone if you have any questions. We'll now move to Matthias Manhart from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Two follow-ups, if I may. First one is on capital allocation. Mexico was historically been a country in where you have invested quite some by the acquisition of Cedrosa. Could you maybe update us a little bit on how the, I would say, the business and the performance of Cedrosa is presently doing? That's my first question. And then the second question is actually on capital expenditures. What should we expect for 2021? Will CapEx go up or will it broadly be in line with 2020?
Yeah, sure, Matthias. Mexico, we had at the time when we entered there a lot of expectations on the market because it's quite a huge market there. And fortunately, after the months that we have our Mexican colleagues within the family, we have seen a great performance. So we have seen an increased revenues on our Cedrosa/Fagron Mexico activities because now we have both brands coexisting, Cedrosa/Fagron Mexico, because we're transitioning into Fagron Mexico. First of all, and secondly, also in our margin evolution. Of course, as we said, the margins were below our group's average, and Mexico is important and relevant in the Latin American activities. And we saw there with the actions that we took, both on the OPEX side and also on the gross margin side, we saw nice evolutions there. Going forward with Mexico, as we said, we are going to finalize the rebranding into Fagron Mexico, and we are introducing new products as we speak for compounding. That, of course, the compounding market, the compounding landscape in Mexico is lesser than that the one we have in Brazil. That is the biggest in the world, 1 million scripts. But though, we see nice traction there into the personalized medication. So for Mexico going forward, we're going to invest in organic growth in our Cedrosa/Fagron Mexico activities.
Yeah, and on your second question, Matthias, so the CapEx will be broadly in line with 2020. So as stated earlier, between 3 and 3.5% of sales will be a general assumption for our CapEx.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question from Justin Scott from Lammergeer. Please go ahead.
Hello, yes. I've got sort of three small questions. The first was, Rafael, you mentioned that you were selling the genomics test to Asia, and one of the benefits of genomics tests is hoping to lead to prescriptions. Are you going to develop a sales force in Asia? Is Asia going to become a small part of your business going forward? And the second question I had was more for Karen, a little bit about how you see managing currency exposure over the long term, whether you're going to use the balance sheet to manage currency exposure with debt or whether you just continue to run it on a constant currency basis and take a little bit of the ups and downs of currencies. I think those are my two questions.
Yes, good morning, Justin. I think it's really early for you, right, there?
Yes, indeed.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for attending the call. Where we were seeing in Asia, as we said, I don't know if you heard, when we started the presentation with the 2020 slide on the entering new partnerships, we have opened, let's say this way, we have started with export activities in Fagron in the last quarter of 2020, right? And we are targeting this Asian region to explore and to fill the compounding industry there. There are compounders. There are compounders that historically have bought the raw materials into our competitors, mainly in the US. So what we are doing, we are targeting these customers, for example, in Malaysia or Singapore. And with the genomics approach, we are closing deals with local clinics and these compounding pharmacies. So we offer, of course, the genomics as a key in order to open the door to these new customers, and then we can sell to them the raw materials or the brands they use to in order to make the preparations, and this is going very well. So next to the new extra revenues that we generate, right, that we ship from Minneapolis, for example, from the Fagron US organization, we also explore the opportunities we have for this new region for us that maybe in the future can play an important role.
Yeah, and then secondly, on the currency exposure, so indeed, especially in 2020, we saw that we had huge impact on translation, mainly regarding the Brazilian real. If we look in general, we operate in an international environment. Our activities are exposed to different types of currency risks. We will hedge transaction exposure if the amount is above a certain level, but we are also exposed to translation risk, and we saw that impacting our numbers enormously in 2020. We typically do not hedge translation risk, but we will use natural hedges. We have done that in the U.S., by having assets and liabilities in foreign exchanges and hedging that using natural hedges. For the Brazilian real, we do not hedge the translation exposure. It's expensive, so we don't do that. Currently, our net debt EBITDA levels do not force us to take action on this. So for now, we decide to take the ups and downs for the Brazilian real as they come. We have sufficient room. We see underlying business. We monitor underlying business impact on margins. We see that market growing. So basically, for the short term, that's our strategy. Of course, when we do acquisitions, we will definitely monitor the impact of certain investments in areas where there's a bigger foreign exchange risk, such as Latin America. We take that into consideration in our investment decision.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. As we have no further questions at this time, I would now like to turn the conference back over to your speakers today for any additional or closing remarks.
Yes, thanks a lot, operator, for helping us during this call. And again, thank you for preparing this one, Constantine, Karin and Jessica, here today. Of course, congratulating our teams worldwide for the fantastic 2020 and for the whole enthusiasm that we enter in 2021. Of course, we need to see how the pandemic evolved, though we strongly believe that we have done our homework in 2020. We have a diversified product portfolio. We have a diversified region exposure. We have managed our resources extremely well. We are very responsible with capital allocation. And of course, we have seen that prevention and personalization of treatments are key in the healthcare industry. Thank you very much also for attending, for your questions, and we wish you a fantastic day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.